Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Running Commentary. I'm in Devon for a week and, well, let's face it, five times Olympian Joe Pavey has agreed to come for a little run in a local area. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Paul?
I'm all right.
Are you feeling better? You've had a lot of problems, haven't you, with your tooth and antibiotics?
I'm still on antibiotics.
Yeah.
And I've got a bit of... And my tooth is hurting.
Oh.
But what can you?
Well, it's very brave that you're still out training.
I'm a very brave person.
Yeah, you are. Maybe it shouldn't be recommended to train with all that going on.
Do you think so? Really?
Well, you have to look after your immune system, don't you? And maybe, you know, it'd be advisable to be resting.
Yeah,
so
I'm
advising that. So I'm not like a hard taskmaster.
No, that's fair enough.
Making you run anyway.
No, that's fair enough. It's a weird one because I'm meant to be slightly training. I've got a mile race on tomorrow.
Oh, so you're going to race even though you're ill?
That's really stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, I might not. Yeah. And is this your... this is your local area. This is where we're running this morning. Where
yeah, this is the Grand Western Canal.
Right.
Near Tiverton. We've started at Sanford Peveril. And it's just gorgeous because lovely scenery, running by the water.
Yeah.
But what's great as well about it is it's off-road, but it's also obviously dead flat being alongside
the canal. Yeah, it looks
so
really nice.
Obviously, I love getting to places like Dartmoor and Devon and everything to soak up the scenery. But with this... You know, you've got both. You've got the scenery, but you can run at a fast pace if you want and do sort of tempo running, get a pace for your long run going.
Nice. And it's a lovely morning.
Yeah.
It's really sunny. And you're coming off the back of a track session last night.
Yeah, it didn't go very well. But
Talk to me about it. So you were saying before we recorded that you'd... haven't been able to use the track for a good year or so.
It'd been quite a busy week and didn't go that well anyway, but I'm keeping trying because I think the sessions are never going to go as well as I'd hoped ever again, maybe, because I'm still looking back at ones I did when I was more in the prime of my career and hoping I can hit those targets. But yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, like so many people, situations, you know, changed in that... Before the first lockdown, like the last March, I was a week away from my first race, been to the track all winter.
Of course.
So gearing up to see if I could run some times that I'd be happy with. And then with the lockdown, I found myself not able to have access to a track for over a year.
And is that your local track then? Is that
I mean, it's difficult,
Exeter,
isn't it? Because it was the same for so many people, but of course, people more in the prime of their career were still like at high performance centres or overseas at training camps, which, fair enough, if I was young, you know, before I had kids, so I'd be doing the same, you know, good on them. But I think I lost quite a lot of form and then, you know, getting on the track middle of April, I found myself with a lot of work to do. But, you know, and of course, like so many people juggling the delights of homeschooling, the teachers definitely do a great job and, you know, fitting all that in. And, you know, it was a positive time as well. It made me realise how much I love running.
Yes, and, yeah, there's a kind of...
A sort of...
You go first. It was a real simple appreciation of running, wasn't it, during lockdown? It was like...
Yeah.
It felt... I mean, obviously, everyone had different experiences of it, but I really felt the need to do it. And yeah. I'd have really missed it if I wouldn't have been allowed to do it.
I know.
And it was really nice to see loads of new people come to running as well.
I know. And funnily enough, like, the running world got a boost, didn't it?
Yeah, so yeah, it sort of did, actually, yeah.
Found running. And,
yes.
You'd see people out running. You'd go... Like I go running around the village and I see lots of people running I hadn't seen running before. And
yeah.
And that was a really good thing. And
it's amazing, yeah.
And also, you know, during that time I got involved with campaigns that were encouraging people to be active in whatever way was possible.
Right.
Under the circumstances, just yeah. because it was so positive for mental health. And
of course, yeah, of course.
You know, a lot of that came into play, but...
So we're, yeah. we're at sort of... similar stages in terms of letting go a little bit of our fast selves, albeit from vastly different levels. And let's talk a little bit. We'll talk about your peak, and then we'll talk about where you're at now. Silver medal European Championships, 2 silvers Commonwealth, World Championship bronze, eventually.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yeah, eventually. I know. It's a long story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's a long story.
Unfortunately, drugs in sport.
Which we will get to.
Awarded later.
And would you say that you were on a trajectory to do that well from youth? Because I've been looking at your career. You did quickly shine, didn't you? You obviously were you aware that how much ability you had when you were young? How did that feel?
Because at primary school, when I was young, you didn't do like cross country and long stuff.
Right.
We only did like 70 metres on sports day.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really any good at that.
Yes.
So I enjoyed just being active. I'd be roller skating for hours, playing football for hours.
Right.
All that sort of thing. It wasn't until I went to secondary school where my PE teacher asked us to run like 2 laps of the sloping grass track. And
I remember that. I remember the 2 laps round there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, never run round a track before. And she was pleased with how I did and recommended I join an athletics club. So I joined Exeter Harriers.
Nice.
And kind of went from there. I eventually joined a group that specialised in distance running. And then I did win the English schools as a under 15 athlete, but
what was that, cross country or was that on the track?
On the track, 1500.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, cross country I was always not that good at because I think I'm not very agile or whatever, you know, like I try
there
hard.
There's a certain agility to cross country, isn't there? It's a sort of rolling with the punches in a way, the different rhythms.
Yeah,
isn't
and I'm a bad yeah. hill runner as well.
Right, right.
But I try, but you know. Yeah. One of my teammates once, I was running in a cross-country race with her, and as she flew past me at the hill, she looked back and laughed, and I like that, cause the banter of it,
yeah,
do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just funny.
No, cross-country is great, because that was at 1,500 metres.
Yeah, so the time I ran, I was comparing that to athletes I was watching on TV and thinking, how on earth do they run that quick? So even though people were saying, oh, you know, did well, I thought, wow, how can they run that quick? Because I knew I was flat to the boards. And
so this would be
when I was 14.
And that would be sort of early 90s.
Oh, 1988, you see. I'm 1988, very old.
Right.
Yeah, and then...
so who were the athletes you were looking at then during that time? I was trying to think of the female athletes.
Over 1,500, obviously... you know, Christine Boxer, Kirsty Wade.
Of course, yeah.
And females. So obviously, Steve Cram.
Yes,
obviously
of course.
Not going to run as quick as them, but as far as... And
didn't Christina end up coaching you at one point?
Yeah, she did. And she helped me get to my first Olympics. So, always be grateful.
I remember
to her
as a...
Yeah.
I remember her and Kirsty Wade as great 800, 1,500 metre runners when I was... Because I'm actually...
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm actually a little bit older than you, so you don't have to...
Not a lot, though, are you?
I'm 51.
Yeah, I'm nearly 48,
yeah.
So similar, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's sort of similar childhood influence. With me, it was all Co-Ovet, Cram, and then into a Cider Wheater.
Yeah.
David Moorcroft over 5,000. you know, and great marathon runners as well, Eamon Martin, and Mick Grattan, and Mike McLeod on the North East Road racing scene. And
yeah.
It was quite a purple patch, wasn't it, really?
I know.
For distance running.
And also, you know, even longer than 1500, obviously watching Liz McColgan win the World Championships at 10,000, but I wasn't thinking of running 10,000 at that stage.
Yeah, didn't her daughter nick the 5,000? Was it last night?
Yeah, I know. Absolutely amazing.
Incredible.
4:28, yeah.
18 seconds off her best.
Yeah, it was absolutely awesome.
Is it wrong to bring up the shoes?
The shoes
are... What do you
think
about it?
And I mean, I'm not going to say that about certain people's performances because, you know...
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
I don't know what shoes people are wearing, I think. And, you know, obviously, Eilish has shown so much promise improving year after year.
Of course, yeah.
So I'm not saying that about her performance. But if we're talking about the shoes in general, I think... there's come to a point of acceptance that that's the way the sport's gone. I think that, you know, the sport's moved on. You almost need to have, this is what time people ran before the shoes.
Yeah, I think so.
But
that's what Tim Hutchins is asking for a bit on Twitter, because he's kind of, there's no point saying the shoes don't make a difference, because they obviously do.
They obviously make
a radical difference.
They make a massive difference. Yeah. And I still think... we're still, in my opinion, in a point where it's not totally a level playing field, and it was even worse.
Yeah.
Because there was a time where, at one point, there was only one company who made, you know, particularly on the road scene side.
Yeah.
Make it, and so therefore...
And if you weren't signed with them, then...
No.
Yeah.
And then now, other companies try and catch up, and it has a little bit still, in my opinion, a bit of a competition whose shoes...
It's a bit of an arms race, isn't it?
Yeah. And then... I think even when other companies are producing certain shoes, some are better than others, and
it's not as simple
anymore. Whereas you think, thinking about watching Zola Budd running in bare feet, I still feel like it's not a level playing field.
I think there's definitely a case for, like, I don't know which shoe was first, the Vaporfly, whatever it's called, sort of pre and post, you know. And it's... even on for club athletes, it's changed the parameters of it, hasn't it? You've got the people who can afford the Zoom Flies or whatever.
I've heard people, you know, chatting to me down at the track saying, oh, I've just taken, you know, half a minute off my PB, and it's only because of the shoes I'm now wearing.
Yes, absolutely,
A huge difference.
Exciting to suddenly wear those, but... undeniably, it skewed the pitch a little bit.
It just, at one point for me, it just felt like another thing, because without being negative, you're trying to battle against, unfortunately, there's still people who cheat and take drugs.
Of course.
And then
you
ended up in the early days having people that have also got the shoes and not.
Yes.
You know, and it was just another thing. But hopefully, you know, other companies are catching up. But I think.
Because you had that with. Running sometimes against people who, like, we'll talk about the World Championships. Was that 2007?
Yes.
And you came in fourth.
Yeah.
And that was later, you were later given a bronze, quite a long time after that.
Yeah.
Because of a positive drug test.
And I was just going to say, obviously no shoes are there then.
Yeah.
And, obviously now other brands are really good as well, you know, like and stuff, but the shoes were an issue back then, but unfortunately
how did it feel?
I was fourth on that day,
yeah,
which was the worst position, because I think if I'd been on the podium
or
whatever, I would have been on the podium feeling like, oh, I got a world medal for my country, but coming fourth, and also I was only just fourth, you know, if I'd been trailing in fourth and it was like the whole race, obviously, but I was like, I think it was literally just couldn't hold on that home straight to keep in a bronze medal position. And
how did it feel sort of lining up for those races?
Yeah, I mean,
suspecting that other people might
be. I had my suspicions about people in the race, particularly the athlete who got caught.
Yeah,
and but when people say to me, oh, were you surprised? Oh, she was cheating. I said, no, I was obviously more shocked that she actually got caught and that I got given a medal 10 years later, because every championship race you're in, obviously, you know, there's a chance that there's people in there that are doping, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so you just have to focus on your own performance, focus on the training, building up to it, focus on getting your best performance. And of course, you know, it's not a nice thing to talk about. Like if I go into a school or something and talk about athletics, I always talk about the amazing experiences I've had and
of course,
working towards goals and everything, because there's, you know, it's definitely important to talk about and raise awareness.
Yes.
But you also want to promote how great it is to be involved in as well. And it's annoying
So,
yeah, it was
you want a clean sport to the extent that you can get it. And it's.
And, yeah, I was. There's been photos of me lying on my back after finishing fourth.
Yeah.
I think it was like, even on question sport, who is that person just looking like a dead corpse on the track, totally devastated?
But at least you knew you were clean.
Yeah.
That was
and
your
I
one
think
thing.
That was kind of why I was devastated, I think. I mean, wasn't like, I've never like ever in my life cried because of the result of a race, because at the end of the day, I'm very lucky. I've had a fortunate life. You know, and it sounds cliche, but people have illnesses, and do you
of
know
course.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was upset and annoyed. But the frustration when I went into warm down area was because I felt like, in fact, I had finished in a medal position, but I don't get to get that. But, you know, it happened to me before, like in 2002.
Yeah.
I was fourth in that world, fourth in that European Championship.
Yeah.
And later date, all three of them have got banned since.
My goodness.
And it's happened, like, I can list loads of races and championships.
Of course.
And people have been banned, but it just so happened that.
You're the sort of, almost the outlier in that sort of looking to podium culture, aren't you, really?
I think
you're not taking assistance. That must be quite
hard
to deal with mentally.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a martyr story about me, because obviously it's happened to other athletes as well.
Of course
it
has, of course.
Of course, yeah, and you've seen that. But yeah, I mean, the only nice thing was I did get awarded the bronze medal at the London Championships in 2017.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My kids,
they saw you
over there, and
they
were born when I did the race.
Yeah.
It was a bit crazy, but definitely bittersweet, because you miss not only what that would have brought you, but you just the amount of times I felt like I was trying to go back to the drawing board after just missing out, and that feeling of, right, I don't want to fail again, was actually, you haven't failed.
Yeah, it breaks the kind of, one of the things that's so attractive in running is that the relationship between effort and reward.
Yeah.
You put in all the effort, and there's I know you're not playing the martyr, and that's, of course, completely understandable, but you have been victim of an injustice. And that must be quite hard.
Yeah.
To gear up again and let's go again for another injustice, you know? It's like.
Yeah, and also, it affects you as in, you know, because you're trying to maintain yourself in the sport.
Yeah.
It affects the fact you don't get the sponsorship.
Of course, financial repercussions.
You know, it's not like you want to make loads of money, but you're trying to keep yourself sustainable. You can still go training. You can still do it as a full-time athlete at that stage and stuff.
So were you always, talk me through the becoming a full-time athlete. Were you always a full-time athlete then? Or what?
No,
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, because I talked about when I was a teenager, so had those results there, but
thank you.
Didn't actually necessarily think I'd be a senior athlete, but got a lot of injuries then.
Right.
But also during the next sort of 7 years where I got on and off of injuries, but also went away and trained to be a physiotherapist.
Yeah.
I've worked as a physiotherapist in an NHS hospital in Bath, which I absolutely loved, had great work colleagues.
Yeah.
Found the work really rewarding.
Yeah.
And I think there was just a burning sort of inkling in the back of my mind that could I make it as a senior athlete.
So you were you running to and from work and doing all that kind of stuff?
I was running with the local athletics group.
Right.
And so
quite a lively scene in this part of the world in terms of running, isn't there?
Yeah.
A lot of running going on, yeah.
Yeah, so I was kept going. I still raced in a lot of things and stuff. Yeah. But I wasn't really running at a stand because I kept stop-starting them all the time. But then my husband and I, he was working as a quantity surveyor.
Yeah.
I was working as a physio. We decided to take a career break and go backpacking around the world.
Right.
And this was really unconventional way of trying to make a world
champion. Trying to be an athlete, yeah.
So I think also I'd been too embarrassed to say to my work colleagues, I'm taking a career break to try and make the world championships.
Yes.
I just felt so embarrassed and stupid and arrogant.
You seem like
or whatever.
A very, you're a very humble person.
I know, just saying, it would have been embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to have a career break to become a world championships competitor.
But I find
I didn't do that. And
a lot of runners at quite high levels could quite combine humility with obviously a lot of determination, because you're very gently spoken and you really, don't worry, I'm not going to get too psych on you. and you've got a really gentle demeanour, but you obviously, you don't get to where you get to be without being really tough, do you? I mean, let's face it, you're putting up with pain for so long. You're training into pain, you're getting used to that.
Yeah, I suppose you just get used to it. You enjoy the challenge.
Right.
You know, I suppose, setting goals. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was inspired by going backpacking and training in such beautiful locations, sightseeing while running.
Nice.
And when I got back, I was fitter than I'd been before. Did a lot of hiking as well, carrying
right.
a backpack. When we pick up logs to do strength and conditioning. Sounds
crazy,
great. But we actually
sounds
did
great.
That. And so
it's like the montage in a Rocky film, isn't it?
You're out there.
Everyone
funny.
Thought you're just chilling, travelling, but you're just working out.
But you know,
constantly.
We had a great time as well. Like we always went out and partied all the time. I mean, because the thing is, that was the beauty of it. I didn't really see myself as a international athlete in a way.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It was sort of, I was trying to be that, but we just had a great time, didn't skimp on doing all the sightseeing we wanted to do. We'd like crawl out the tent,
nice.
Bleary-eyed, and start running, which was always a struggle for me early in the morning. But yeah, we made sure we...
So you went all around the world then, did you?
Well, we did a lap, but we did keep to places where we knew we could run. So,
right.
So we kept going Hong Kong, Bali, Australia, New Zealand, Fiji and Hawaii, but like
right.
when we're in New Zealand and nice. Australia, we'd obviously do a whole lap of the country type
yes,
thing, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
just
yeah, beautiful.
One place and out. But yeah, it was awesome, and came back a bit rusty on the track to begin with because I hadn't used the track while I was away, and then fortunately made the World Championships in Athens in 1997.
And was that your first major championships?
Yeah, and I think interestingly, I then made a mistake that a lot of runners can make. I thought, right, okay, I've got in the team. Now I want to add everything in that I wasn't doing. I want to
right.
do plyometrics. I want to sprint fast. I want to jump up and down off stuff.
Yes,
drills, gym,
yeah.
lifting stuff. And
sort of Seb Coe roots, kind of. He did all the plyometrics. And
yeah, and you just think, right, I want to go to the next level now.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting injured and having an operation on my knee. And that cost me 2.5 years out. I didn't race. Ooh. So I was worried my career could be over before it just started. So
yeah.
But I battled back and made my first Olympics in Sydney in the year 2000. So
initially, you got all that strength from running loads abroad, lifting bits and bobs, doing loads of walking. And then it takes a while for that to transfer into speed, doesn't it? So you kind of come down.
Yeah.
You do all the track. Well, it takes a while to get your legs.
Yeah, it does.
But that, the strength you had from that must have been massive, and you sort of
feel
it flow through into your first championship.
Yeah.
Very exciting. How do you handle the nerves of a big championship? I mean, you obviously handle it well because you perform very well. Did you have any rituals before a race or anything?
I think
you go through?
It was funny. I was talking about this with someone the other day that I think. You know, you put all those weeks and months of training and you're having all the ups and downs, working through niggles, trying to make decisions on a daily basis about your training,
right.
having your schedule. And then on that start line, I stand there and I feel like I have a moment of calm, because all you need to do now is race. I know it sounds like, oh, the race is obviously a big deal, but you can't prepare anymore.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can have that calm over you that you can no longer
there's nothing else to be done.
Get ready for it.
Yeah.
And so I take that moment to compose myself, but then I try and focus on, like, I've got a job to do, I need to do this well, but also try and think of it as seizing the opportunity.
Right.
This is now an opportunity that I want to relish.
Yeah.
Rather than it being the other way around and you're dreading it or something.
Yes, yeah, yeah, no, you, yeah. No, you're right.
So
excitement then, as opposed to dread.
Yeah, sort of. Try and think, right. And also, according to what race you're doing, whether you're trying to get a qualifying time or you're trying to run tactically, you're focused on what you want to do, particularly awareness of lap times.
Yeah.
So that you're sort of really in the zone and you're thinking all the time. You're trying to concentrate on keeping relaxed and not wasting energy in those early laps.
Yeah.
And
don't run out in lane four for the first few laps or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny though, because definitely most of the races I've run, I've thought, right, I've got to be on the curb.
Yeah.
To not waste energy. But when I surprisingly won gold at the European Championships when I was over 40, was when I didn't use that particularly, because I was on the curb.
Yeah.
And the first time, probably, it was a situation where actually that was wasting more energy, because it was such a crowd of people, everyone was getting spiked.
You've got to battle your way through.
Well, the problem is, not only that, it was such a crowd that you couldn't let your leg
come through
fling
naturally
out in front of you.
Right.
You know, you had to cut your stride short.
Yeah.
And that was actually tiring, wasting energy. And because the early pace was slow, I actually ended up feeling better being slightly wide of that. But that's gauged by pace, because, of course, if the pace is really fast, you've got to
you're
be
in single
in
line anyway. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So do you focus on, that's interesting, actually, because it's more tiring to run at someone else's slightly slow pace than your own slightly faster, isn't it? If you feel like you're constantly, you can't stride right, that the mental energy to do that is exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be.
And
do
you concentrate on beating individual people, or is it more abstract than that? Like, I just want to be top three, or is it a pace thing, or?
It just depends, doesn't it? I think for all runners, sometimes you go into an event thinking, right, this is a great chance for a PB.
Yeah.
Conditions are good, or sometimes runners need to get a specific time to qualify themselves for something else.
Yeah.
And so then you've sort of got that agenda. One time when I found, like, it was really funny that I was in a race where it shouldn't be the agenda, but it was. I was selected to run in 2016. I was selected to run in the European Championships, which that year was just before the Olympics.
Right.
And I didn't have a qualifying time
for
the Olympics.
Yeah.
Because European time. And so it was my last-ditch attempt to try and get the time.
Right.
And it was a hard time for me to get at that stage of my career, you know, being that age. And so I literally had to just focus on that, because they took off with about 13 laps to go.
Yeah.
And if I'd done that, I just know I wouldn't have got my time. And I desperately wanted to go to that Olympics.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, I ran myself flat to the boards by the end of the race. And sure enough, if I'd gone with that,
you'd have broken up
some. Oh, yeah. And so, generally, once you go into a championship, you're just thinking about the tactics.
Yeah.
The other runners, thinking about your own strengths and weaknesses, because, you know, you might find you feel you haven't got a blistering kick over the last 200.
Yeah.
So you're going to be thinking about doing something about that if you're
so would you
in contention,
would you be, you'd be trying to take him out with two laps to go or push the pace?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, of course, the way distance running has gone, there's, you know, and as I got older particularly as well, because obviously when I ran in Rio, the winning time was so fast that it'd be ridiculous for me to be talking about it as though I'd be thinking of how I'm going to win that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But in races where I was more in my prime and there is chance of medals, of course you're thinking about how you're going to medal and what other runners have as far as their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you kind of crested that period when African distance runners became big players, didn't you? I mean, there were sort of... There's a time... When did they sort of start to really come through? Sort of early 2000s, would
you say? Yeah, I think... yeah, you're probably right saying that's when it really took off. I mean, there was...
Because China had a purple patch, didn't
they? Yeah, obviously, even when I started in 1997, the Kenyans were doing really well.
Right.
Kim McDonald had a good squad of Kenyans that he was bringing over to Teddington.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of went from there. But, yeah, when you look back at the races of the early 90s, like you say, there isn't the East African dominance going on.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, especially when I'm looking back at photos of
distance
races around sort of early 90s, there isn't the...
It has changed, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, agents have gone over and got involved with getting...
Of course,
getting African
so much talent go over.
Yeah.
Was that quite intimidating as well, suddenly dealing with this sort of seemingly inexhaustible stream of...
Natural
athletes, you know.
Once I started my career, there was always good East African athletes running once I was running the senior team. But yeah, you know, they have become probably even more dominant
now
than they were a few years back. Yeah.
And you famously, so I should have mentioned at the start, but you famously won that gold medal at the 10,000. Was that... within a year of having a daughter, was it?
Yeah, it was 10 or 11 months after we had our second child.
Right.
So, yeah, it was all really unexpected. I think I was really at the start of thinking, can I get in the team just one more time?
Yeah.
I wasn't at all thinking of medals. And I suppose I tried to make a comeback to see if I could get a team place because... In London 2012, I was already about 38-ish, but that was when, after all those years of running, I actually got my 10,000 metre PB.
Incredible.
And so it probably made me think, well, it's not long ago that I got my PB, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So that was probably what made me think initially maybe I could have a chance of qualifying for the team for either Commonwealths or... Europeans, you've got to remember the Commonwealths were that year as well earlier.
Yeah.
And there's more places because a lot of our good distance runners are Scottish, for example.
Right, of course.
Some of them run for Wales. But I mean, so, you know, even people like Eilish also run for Scotland. So it leaves more places open, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And so I was even thinking, even if I could try and get a place in the Commonwealth Games and stuff like that. But no way did I think of medals.
So and, how can you... How did that happen then, getting faster?
I just
as you
thought...
Hit four, what happened there? Was it a seam of training? Yeah. Was it experience?
I was really making sure I wanted to enjoy that newborn time, you know. And obviously I was feeding the baby and I had a cesarean as well, so that made it even trickier to start back running to begin with.
Right.
But I just started, you know, these early runs... Obviously, I was feeding the baby, and Emily wouldn't take a bottle for at least the first 5 months, so she always had to be with me.
Yeah.
And so Gav would be pushing her in pram. Jacob, who was four, would be going back and forth on his little bike.
The family pavey on manoeuvres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just kept working away. I mean, when I went down the track, we'd all go as a family. But the times that I was doing were terrible, but it didn't stress me because I thought I can only do what I can do.
And having a kid sort of gives you a nice sort of bit more of a rounded perspective, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, just
the balance that it gave me,
yeah,
I think was a big part of you know, why as a result it was probably my best result, you know, winning a European gold. I hadn't done that before, and so that happy balance in my life and not stressing about training and just getting on with it, and definitely a big thing. And learned to be very flexible in my training, prioritize the important aspects of training, tried to get that done. One of the biggest battles was doing the trial because it was really early in the year on the 10th of May, which is quite early for a trials race.
Should we turn around quite soon just because I'm a bit how long have we been running for now?
3.8.
Right, okay. But how long in time?
33.
Okay, cool. That's all right for me.
Yeah. And yeah, so that was kind of the battle, was getting a team place in the first place, really.
Because
that's the thing, if you're not in the trial, you're not going to be at a championship anyway.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I won the trial, so I got my team place. And then I did the 5K in the Commonwealth Games and got a bronze medal in that, which again was a big surprise, running against the Kenyans.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then 10 days later was the European Championships. And, yeah, I was shocked to win that after years of trying, thinking I was doing everything right, going on training camps sort of all over the world.
Because you used
resting,
to you used to go to South Africa, didn't you, used to do?
Yeah, and I hadn't, even at that stage, I hadn't been on any training camps for about 6 or 7 years.
Right.
Because I stopped going away just before I got pregnant with our first child, Jacob. And I thought, you know, I've done that, I've experienced that, it was great. And now draw my line under that. I'm on the next stage of my life.
Yeah.
Wanted that stability for the
kids.
Of
course, of course, yeah.
So
what you're saying to athletes is have kids earlier. Is that what you're saying?
I think it was just nice that when I talked to other runners, when I was in the prime of my career and I was going all over the world and stuff, that, you know, they're looking at you thinking, well, it's right for you. They're thinking if they could just do that,
yes, yeah,
they'd
yeah, yeah.
be running better than they are. And it's lovely to chat to people, and we're all comparing our busy lives, juggling things. We're all in the same position. And it taught me that actually, even if there's obstacles, you can try and find a way around it, you know.
Yes.
And you don't need to go away. You just need to train consistently, work out what your priorities are with your training so you can fit in all the family life, and you can have quality family time being active as a family as well.
Maybe by being less all-consuming mentally in that perspective, you can maybe focus a bit better, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd imagine there's a tension to making your entire life about how fast you're going to run, which obviously professional athletes have to do, but there's something that you gain and lose from that, isn't there, I suppose?
Yeah, I think.
And that you realise when you have kids, I don't know, just a bit more grounded and strong,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely.
What an incredible moment to win a gold medal like that.
I think the funny thing was, I was always referred to then as Joe Pavey 40. The whole year. I mean, I'm older than that now. But it was like, everything was Joe Pavey 40.
Yeah.
And that was
like
my new double barreled surname.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the banter. I had a lot of banter from my teammates.
Yeah.
I had a lot of banter when I went to the Rio Olympics in that respect, though, because I was 42 then, and I had two teammates in my event, the 10,000 that I was doing.
Right.
And they were both 20 years younger than me.
Wow. Wow. Come on in. Wow.
And, you know, really, I should have been a team manager, not... and that was fun. I had a lot of laughs about that. I ran a 5K recently, which I did terribly in, but I was running against people who I was 30 years older than.
Wow.
So...
Yeah, that's incredible.
Which, I mean, you're going to do at events, but on a track, it's a little bit more like, maybe I'm...
So what are you sort of... I suppose that brings us on to how we started. You sort of... You're back on the track again. It's something I found the last couple of years. Just that sort of inevitable feeling of losing speed. That sort of, it's that sort of moment of, it's like you're pressing your nose against this window looking to the past, and you've got to kind of walk away from the window.
Yeah.
Do you know? But it's harder for you because you achieve stuff. What's it like, that sort of transition? So I imagine you'll always want to be a serious-ish club runner, or you want to compete.
Yeah,
you see, you like running fast. It's just, how do you modulate that? You know, how do you?
No, I think, you know, with running, like, we all just love it, don't we?
Yeah.
So you just keep doing it. I mean, I love all aspects of running. I love going running in beautiful locations. I love the running community.
Yeah.
All the social side of that and the interaction. And I still love setting myself goals, and I still love going down the track and trying to hit the targets, even if I'm not.
Yeah.
I love trying, and I love racing. And I like.
So what was your session last night? I know you don't really want to talk about it, but we'll find it interesting. What were you aiming for, and what did you do?
I only did 6 times a K, and I only had a minute recovery, because, weirdly, I was in a rush.
Right.
Because I was doing an event for my sponsor.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I got back. But the track was closed the right. whole day up until I went, because there was a school sports day that it was booked
right,
out
okay,
for.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I only had, like... So it was fairly unprofessional, because I only had, a 45-minute window
right.
where I could do this track session.
Yeah.
And then... I just thought, so I'll do something rather than nothing.
Yeah, quick warm-up and then not get into it. Sort of thing.
Yeah, because it was the only day I could fit it in. So that didn't help. But it was really windy as well.
Yeah.
When I get to the track, because of where it is, it's on like an elevated position. My routine is to moan how windy it is when yeah. I arrive. Every time, I never not do
course.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got there. Moaned to the groundsman how windy it was, because there was no other runners there at the time.
Here's
for me to moan at.
Yeah.
No, it's only we don't just moan.
Yeah,
I like ask if we have a good weekend and things, you know, chat about. But yeah, it helps me psychologically to moan how windy it is before I start, because then maybe that sort of cancels
helps
out the fact
it,
that
yeah.
I'm just old, and it is just all about how windy it is. And if it yeah. wasn't windy, I'd be.
Face with the truth, yeah. So, and what were you doing your kilometres in then?
Oh,
with your minute recovery?
I shouldn't say. I only had a minute recovery.
Yeah.
I was in flats. I was only doing about better 3:14, which wasn't good enough.
3:14?
Yeah, but it's not. It's yeah. not good enough, because obviously when I was young, I'd want to be doing those all under 3 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but when you were young,
But so this year. I think being away from track for a whole year, it's just the times are really not good enough. But I enjoy trying.
Yes, absolutely.
And
and you're waking your body up again in a different
yeah,
way, aren't
and hopefully
you?
I'll get a bit better. But, you know, I'm just being honest. I'm not going to say, well, you asked me to. I'm not going to pretend
no,
that
no,
I did
yeah, yeah.
something great.
Well, to everyone listening, that's massively impressive. But it's everyone's at their own level. And with a minute recovery, I imagine that's quite a tough workout, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
with short recoveries like that.
Yeah, I suppose, like, I don't normally have a minute recovery on K's, but I literally wanted to do more, but I had to go home because I didn't have time. Sounds
right.
really unprofessional, but it was like, it was just one of those days where I had something I had to be back for.
Yeah.
And normally, you see, these days, I'll go to the track during the day when the kids are at school.
Right.
So that it doesn't encroach on family life, because I'm not at that stage where I would spend the whole evening regularly away doing a track. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
because,
yeah.
I'm sort of juggling things and running, well, doing, getting involved with that stuff, but at the track, I may as well go in the day if I can. And so I hadn't been in the evening, even though it was early evening.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've done that for, well over a year, you know. Year and a half. So it was just the circumstances. So I normally...
Would you normally do it? So what's your favourite training time of the day if you want to do
Well, that's
quality
the same.
Stuff?
When I was really like, okay, right, I'm trying to go to the Olympics and stuff, I would always... go in the morning to get the most of them done.
Yeah.
Since I had children, because it fits in better. But I can run so much better in the evening normally.
Yeah.
So I would actually switch to doing them in the evening just for a few weeks, just because I needed to get where I needed to get, you know. Because even when I was younger, I was just... only certain sessions I could attempt in the morning.
Right.
One of them being 400s, because you only have to get around the track once.
Yeah.
And that was easier in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got to sort of get your body used to the time that the event's at and all that kind of...
Yeah, it's blather. Funny. I mean, looking back, I should have maybe done that more, but I always used to just maximise... how much sleep I could get. As in,
yeah.
for example, when I did the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, you know, and you've got those massive time differences, there'd be everybody, you know, trying to stay up all night or whatever, trying to get the body clock right. I was just so exhausted, I just slept when I wanted.
I think that's the
thing
to do.
You know, I think, I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, because thinking about it scientifically, you've got your body clock. But I always used to find that, you know, you haven't got that long to your event.
Yeah.
You spend the whole time just being exhausted, that can actually be worse, I think.
I sort of agree. You can't really... People come up with lots of formulas to beat jet lag, but that don't seem to work in my experience. You just kind of just accept that sometimes you're going to have to sleep in the afternoon for a few hours. And,
yeah, like I remember I was doing a track session in Melbourne in the lead up, and I'd been like asleep the whole day before it.
Right.
And and I was like, oh, and then, you know, woke up and I thought, well, okay, that's horrendous because really bad body clock situation, but then I could at least do the session.
Yeah.
If I'd forced myself, because I'd got a bus booked with the team, you know, to take me to the track and stuff.
Yeah.
If I just stayed up the whole day to get my body clock right, I probably would have failed to achieve what I wanted in the session, you know?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So sort of, but yeah, scientifically, obviously you want your body clock right, but yeah, I didn't. Because when I did the Athens Olympics, my first round was 5 to midnight.
Wow.
And so we ran, wow, ran on 2 days, started one day.
Yes, yeah, next, yeah,
even
that's
though it was a 5K. But I loved that. I like running late.
Right.
So I didn't mind that. Whereas I remember being in the village and watching athletes from different countries, like coming back from dinner, and they'd be heading out to get used to running at midnight.
Right.
And we're like, oh, don't do that.
And would you take your coach, which by now is your husband, Gavin?
Yeah.
He'd come with you to all these events, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's all gone through phases, as in when we were younger, we were very much going to camps together, and he'd always pacemate me, you see,
right,
which was a massive help.
Yeah.
And then when we had kids, he was no longer really able to pacemate, but when Jacob was little, we did actually sometimes like have someone there so we could just do it together. But that was very few and far between because, like, for example, in 2014, we're in Devon, based in Devon, but the Exeter track, our local track, was closed from March to September, so the whole summer. So that was just timing, and they're really helpful at Yeovil particularly.
Yeah.
But it's an hour away from our house, so we always used to go there as a family. And of course, Gav was there, and obviously I was breastfeeding Emily anyway, so we all had to go.
Yeah.
But so we're all there, but he couldn't pacemate me, you know, but he was there coaching me,
giving some support, yeah,
session and stuff. So yeah, I was went through phases, and then funny, we go over under a bridge, it's suddenly loud. People wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
Some bridges along the route. But yeah, so also, you know, with the kids, it went from Emily being a pram and Jacob on a bike to Emily being on the back of a bike and Jacob on a bike. And then Emily on a bike, but too slow.
Right.
And us going back and forth. And then eventually both of them on a bike quick enough. And then Jacob now on a bike being bored at how slow we are running.
Yes, you know, of
sort
course.
Of gone
yeah, yeah, yeah. Different phases, yeah.
Yeah, different phases of how it works, like a lot of people find, obviously.
And how did you find the transition to the marathon? It's sort of a natural progression, isn't it, when you're that good at 10,000? So.
It's funny, because I'm glad I've done a couple of marathons. You know, like, you must find people say, have you done a marathon?
Yes, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like,
as a runner, to, yeah, it's a kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, what, you haven't done a marathon? Yeah. Well, you're not a runner then. And it was such an amazing experience as well. I loved it. I mean, I always thought earlier on that, like, the tradition is to move up in distances. And I found that, you know, that's what I was thinking at the time. But actually, I found I was still more suited to what I was more suited at.
Yeah.
So
some runners find that, don't they? I mean, Mo Farah, obviously a fantastic athlete, but marathon never quite suited him, did it?
Yeah, I mean,
really?
It's an example, isn't he, of how amazing his track performances were. And then, of course, he ran a good marathon.
Yeah, of course he did. Yeah, of course.
But he didn't.
But relative to being, like, the best in the world sort of thing,
yeah,
which
exactly.
He was.
Yeah, yeah. So, what's your favourite distance, then?
I like a sunny, a balmy summer evening. And a club 5K classic, that's what I like.
Yeah.
Just 5K on the track.
Yeah, when the
just everyone
going
down, for it. Yeah, yeah, that's what I like.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's what I like. I mean, yeah. I love all races. I love cross country. It's hard to say you love marathons because they're so intense, aren't they? But I appreciate what they give me, you know.
Yeah.
You're never the same as after when you set off, are you? There's something about it changes you in a way that I really like.
And running down the Mall at the end in the London Marathon.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, like, it's sort of surreal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
for
amazing.
For anyone that does it, yeah.
How, and in terms of, like, do you find you've got to do a bit more stretching as you get a little bit older? Did you do that anyway, or strengthening work? Or have you got any tips for people?
I think one thing I'm realising is that, you know, I do a bit of strength and conditioning, but I think that's the thing I need to try and add in a bit more, because when I'm going down the track, I feel like I'm getting less off each foot strike. I'm getting nothing back.
Do you know what I mean?
And I've definitely noticed that this year. And the whole thing is, when you're older, you get natural decrease in muscle mass, as well as all the long list of other things that are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Like reduction of VO2 max and all those things. But, yeah, so I think I need to start doing that a bit more. But when I talk about when I was still kind of doing relatively well considering I was older, I think one of the things that I did do was just use my experience.
Right.
Because as you get older, you still got that experience. Like, for any runner, you learn things about what suits you as far as training and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And what works for you. And I could use that. And also, I didn't treat myself as old. I still kept all the important components of training, like the speed work, the track sessions. Because I think sometimes when people get older, they maybe stop doing the speed workouts. They think they're old.
Yeah.
And then they slow down, because even if you were young...
Slow down even more,
If you were young and you stopped doing certain training components, you'd get slower, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always age-related. But, of course, you have to listen to your body more.
Yeah.
Have a schedule, but think of it as a flexible plan. You might need longer to recover. I often find that I think my legs are going to feel recovered when I go and do a session.
Yeah.
And then they're not. You know, that sort of, it's not like I, it's funny because I can feel recovered, like I'm ready to do a track workout. It's not like I can't walk around the house or anything, but then when I start actually starting the stopwatch off and I head off, oh, you know, my legs feel bad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's lovely here, isn't it?
It is beautiful, yeah.
But see how it's a nice surface?
Yeah, it's beautiful, yeah. It's not too soft that it's tiring, but it gives you a bit of cushioning.
And also, there's not a lot of slip. You know, some gravel can slip too much and you can feel it on your Achilles.
Yeah. So how much mileage are you doing now, and how much would you be doing
at your peak, I'm not doing a massively high mileage at the moment, because I'm still seeing if I can get my sessions a bit better than they are, because I want to, in the immediate future, do some races that are relatively short, like 5K, 10K, if you know what I mean. And so after that, I might up the mileage a bit to maybe do half marathons and stuff.
Right. So that's your aim this summer, to get on the track and do some 5s and 10s?
Yeah, probably just 5K and then 10K on the road.
Right.
Yeah. So,
no fascination with going longer?
Yeah, I know. That's
do
what
you
I
have the fascination?
About.
Do you?
Yeah, I know. I've talked about that next year. I'm thinking of
really. You thinking
trying ultra? I won't be good at it. I just want to do it to experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's what I think about running. There's always more things you can do, different things you can do, different goals to have.
Yes.
So, yeah, definitely. I've been chatting to people about that. And I admire all these ultra runners. They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, it's sort of an incredible mindset, isn't it, to keep going like that, to keep battling away. And
what's your longest run done then?
Just a marathon. I've never gone beyond
a marathon.
I'm tempted to do an ultra for that thing, you know, for that sort of... There is something, but you reach a stage when you're doing a slow run, after about an hour or so, where it feels great, and you think, I could just do this for ages.
Yeah.
But of course, you probably can't.
I know, but it feels
so good, doesn't it? You just think, why not just do one of those?
It's not as simple as just saying, oh, you just run slow, because that's not easy, is it?
Yeah.
You've got to, like...
Your nutrition and all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah, but, like, you know, it's timing your legs.
Yeah.
Like, however slow you go, your legs are going to get tired.
Yeah.
And also, sometimes I've found you can start getting problems in your hips.
Yeah.
Because when you go slower because you think you're running so far, you start using your hip flexors to pick your legs up.
Right.
Rather than powering off, and you get sore around the hips. And
yeah.
I mean... Whatever pace you run, even if you're
it's always taking a bit of a toll, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do admire people who...
And your feet as well, of course.
Yeah.
I always underestimate how much it's taken out of my feet, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, stretching and strengthening is something I've started doing the last few weeks. I've been dealing with a sort of persistent calf injury.
Right.
But it's getting better. But I've just had to bite the bullet and all that stuff that... You don't really want to do, you know.
Yeah.
You just got to do it, I think, if you want to keep running, you know.
Yeah, calf stretching is really important. I think when you've got calf injury, keeping the bottom of your foot mobile is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
What you mean, like doing little massages with it and
stuff? Yeah, like on the plantar fascia under the foot, right. It all kind of links on up, and if I'm going to get bad calves, my whole foot will be tight and... So, and, you know, stretching against the wall with your knee straight, and then with your knee bent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there can be quite persistent calf injuries, I think.
Yeah, they can.
This one's been quite hard work. I can feel it leaving me now, which is great. But it's taken a while.
You're not tempted really to wear the funny long socks. That's what I
well,
no, protect my calf.
Well, that was a trademark for you, wasn't it?
Yeah,
during races.
I do wear them to race. I don't wear them for my training. I do wear them when I run on the track in training, but not
right.
when I'm... I don't...
Is that to protect against injury, or...?
Yeah, I've just found it stopped me injuring my calves as much.
I just need to do that. It's pure...
It does. You'll probably
I just need to buy them. Yeah.
The difference it makes. You can get calf sleeves if you don't want to wear the sock.
Right.
And you might... If you don't like the look of them, I think they look more acceptable because they look like a they look like a support. Do you know what I mean?
There is a sort of
wearing a long sock.
There's a funny little stigma about the long sock. They do look a bit comic, but if they work, then they work, don't they? You know.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I'm probably happy in a race.
Yeah.
But if I've got a bad, you know, I'm serious. Like if I've got a bad calf. If I can get away, I wear tights so people can't see that I'm. Do you know what I mean? Or when I warm down, if I have to, like when I finish, I'm often cutting it fine. The track's going to shut, so I have to warm down in the car park. You
right.
see.
Yeah.
And so I'm boiling hot, and I could just warm down in my shorts. But I put my tights on, so I'm not running around the car park in my silly socks.
Calf compression shame.
But
thank you. Funny.
But yeah, no, I don't. But I think. It's worth it, you know.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
But yeah, the calf sleeves are good because you could... And if you're really self-conscious, you just wear one.
Yeah.
You? But I think I always wear
that
two, though.
That would look even more bizarre, yeah.
If I've got a bad calf, I'd still wear two because I like to keep the body equal.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're one, then people aren't going to think, oh, look at what you're wearing. I think, oh, he's got a bad leg.
Yeah.
Would that
yeah.
be better?
Yeah. But it's funny what you... willing to accept to continue running.
Yeah.
Because it's so... I don't know if you had any periods of injury recently, but I'm still... I've been running off and on for, you know, 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
And I'm still amazed by how much I miss it when I can't run.
I know. And it
I really feel
it
after three or four days. I'm a bit of a pain, you know.
Do you find that you look at other people and think, wow, they can do that and I can't at the moment? And you think...
You're deeply envious.
Yeah, it feels weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had a calf injury a couple of years ago that just wouldn't get better for weeks. And I'd go out and sometimes, like, I try and run 50 minutes, it would just suddenly... Like, I can walk on it, just suddenly I think, oh, this keeps going on and on. And, and with any injury, you think it will never get better, but it does in the end.
Yeah. It's that sort of... For me, the dangerous point is when you feel it's got better the first time and you want to... Again, it's that chasing thing, isn't it? You want to chase form of fitness, you know?
Yeah.
You've just got to take it gradually, haven't you, you know?
Yeah.
On your way back.
And I think you have to be careful with... gym and strength type work as well,
right?
Because I think you can end up doing so much strengthening that then when you run on it you're actually making it quite vulnerable if it's from the strengthening work,
right?
So you have to get the balance.
Do you do yoga or Pilates or anything like that?
I should, shouldn't I?
I know, we all should.
I can't even touch my toes, but
neither can I.
You know, I'm not even close.
Yeah,
it's an embarrassment. I've always been like that, and yeah,
that's really
terrible. I'm not very agile, flexible. Years ago, I did a aerobics class with one of my friends because I thought I'd be sociable. And it was so embarrassing because, for one, I was so uncoordinated and I couldn't do any of it. But also, it was a really advanced class. So the instructor just shouted out the name of the moves.
Okay.
And it was like, it was so embarrassing. And it would be the same if I went to yoga or Pilates, but I should.
I've just started doing it the last few weeks, and I was really not a yoga person at all. But as you'd expect, I found it really useful.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I found it really useful. Yeah, just doing a sort of 20-minute, 30-minute yoga session online, just really helped. You know?
Oh, so you just looked at one?
I just YouTube it online.
Yeah.
And just beginner's yoga, so you don't have to be embarrassed with anyone else, because
so I could build up.
Yeah, the first exercise is like sitting cross-legged on the floor with a straight back, and I could barely do that. Do you know what I mean? It's like it takes ages.
That reminds me, actually, years ago.
Thank you.
Before there was online anything.
Yeah.
At the start of my career, I bought a yoga book.
Right.
And then I had it on the floor, haven't I? And I was trying to get in these positions, and it was really complicated. And you can barely keep the book open when you're trying to... And then I was trying to, like, put other books on top of it to keep it open on the page. And then you're, like, reading the instructions.
It's easier now.
And, nowadays, like you say, called it. But, yeah, and I gave up quite quickly because I shouldn't have done, though. It's bad.
So how old are your kids now, then? You got two kids?
Yeah, 7 and 11. Emily's 7, Jacob's 11.
Nice.
How old are your kids, then?
They are 22.
Oh, really?
21 and 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I had them a bit earlier.
What are they up to, then?
They are... My eldest son is looking for work. He's just been in Devon for the week. My daughter is at Bristol University. Oh. And my young son is... He's at the Brit School, studying dance at the Brit School. He's going to be sort of more of a performer.
Oh, brilliant.
And yeah, they've all coped through, hopefully coming out through COVID as we emerge.
It's not nice for them at that age.
No.
Because, you know, they probably...
They're waiting to start their life.
Socialise and meet people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you have to do any homeschooling or...
Yeah, the homeschooling was...
I struggled with that.
It was difficult. Yeah. Jacob didn't do enough at all, but we tried. Yeah. Emily would do it, but it was slow going.
Yeah.
Teachers do a great job. But also, you know, we were... I mean, the schools that my children are at did a brilliant job, not saying that, but they gave us the work every day.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously some people... There was lessons online and they just had to make sure their children were on a computer.
Right, okay.
Do you know what I mean? So, not saying I'd want that. I mean, the schools at my church did a fantastic job, but it was like they only did work if we were sat there doing it with them.
Yes,
Jacob was old enough to do it on his own. And he was capable of doing it on his own, but of course he didn't. He only did it if I sat
there. Why would you? Of course you wouldn't.
No.
Yeah.
And, so it was difficult because... you know, with Jacob's age being 11, some people were at a stage where they had to be on a computer being visible to their teacher.
That's really stressful, and, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't have that, but yeah, it was tricky, and it was stressful, I think, like, because you know, as a parent, you have that permanent guilt that you're not able to get it all done.
Yeah.
And you feel like, and then
I'd have really struggled. And at the same time, you try to keep them happy.
Yeah.
Not add to the stress of the situation.
Exactly. You've got to think about their mental health.
Yeah.
And then you feel like by nagging them, you're making their mental health worse. That they're missing out on seeing their friends and going to clubs and that. And so you sort of end up feeling like, you're worried they're missing schoolwork, and you're worried that you're nagging them because that's not helpful.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, yeah.
But at the same time, there's something... Maybe I felt it more because I'm at that age where the kids are leaving. There's something quite nice about being forced to be together, sort of.
Yeah.
There was times when that felt really good.
Oh, yeah.
But it was... it was pretty stressful.
Yeah. We didn't see the sea for so long, and that was weird.
Yeah.
You know, when you weren't allowed to drive anywhere.
Yeah.
And also, for me, in a running sense, I ended up getting injured because, you know, I kept the rules. I only ran from my front door.
Right.
Or on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And...
You got a treadmill at home, have you?
Yeah. And so I got injured in the end, like in the glute, and it was really bad. And it was because I was just running from the door and everywhere was so hilly.
Yeah.
I tried to do an interval session. I managed to find, I think, 27 seconds of flat that still wasn't flat.
Yeah.
Because I had to go back to the start point. I thought, oh, I could do some 200s or something. And couldn't even run in both directions. It was still slightly uphill. But there's just literally no flat at all. And I didn't want to drive anywhere because you're not allowed to. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course. Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was the start of, I got really injured going into that summer after I'd built up all the fitness. The time it was the school holidays, I could only jog 10-minute miling because it was just tugging on my bone and my glute so badly. And that was also purely caused by not being able to train where I'd normally train.
Yeah.
So that set me back as well. But you get different priorities. I mean, not complaining, girl, you know, when you see how
thank goodness we were given
amazing people working in the NHS and then awful things that were happening. You didn't feel like you wanted to dwell on, a bit of a running niggle. It's not really
and it's nice that
in the scheme of things.
We were always allowed to have that hour a day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Some countries you couldn't do it, you know.
Yeah.
It was
I didn't like come valuable. Here
yeah.
for months.
Really?
Because
right.
it was, you know.
It was a drive sort
yeah.
of thing. So you're looking so you're pleased that the races are coming back then. Have you had any races?
Yeah, I did one 5K
right.
on the track.
What with a sort of club race, are you? Thank you.
Thanks. I ran over a minute and 40, so a minute and 42 seconds slower than my PB, which is quite a lot over 5K. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know,
great
I
to
just
be back
loved,
running again, racing again.
Yeah, I enjoyed it and it was fun, so I'm going to try again.
Yeah.
Now I've set myself a bad marker that I can try
and
beat.
Yeah, of course. Well, your first race like that is bound to be a little bit. It's just like returning to this world that you've forgotten a little bit, haven't you?
Yeah, and I'm just enjoying everything about the running world, you know, getting involved in events and everything. It's not all about just competing, is it, with running? It's being part of
the community.
Yeah, the running community and all the sort of things that happen within that, and doing ambassador type roles at certain things, and been having the great opportunity to be able to chat to other runners and hear all their stories and that.
Yeah.
You know, I love all that.
And you had your book out in, was that 2016 you had your book?
Yeah, it got a bit delayed, but eventually it was out in 2016.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was about running and combining running and being a mum.
Yeah, I think it was just like a story of full circle from being a schoolgirl runner, all the ups and downs of my career, but finally, it was really the story of finally achieving the gold at European Championships when I least expected it, when all that complicated things about being an athlete had gone and I was juggling a busy life, had that happy balance, and
what
how that taught me how that, you know, that can be the time when you actually achieve what you thought was no longer possible, really.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's so lovely. Here we go. Whew. So, and also open to new experiences as we run on into our lives.
Yeah, and you know, I think once you find a passion for running, you just want to keep doing it. Like, yes. I know you love it.
And, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why we all keep going, isn't it? Because we just love it.
Forever thus. Joe, yeah. Thank you so much for that. How long did we do, just out of interest?
7.53 miles.
Okay, cool.
And 8.53.
Cool. Running
with Paul Tomkinson and Rob Deering.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.